Working Cows Podcast, Bonus Episode 1.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by chriswilliamsaudio.com. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your audio production needs. Hello, everybody. This is the first in a series of bonus episodes I am producing in conjunction with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. They were gracious enough to open up to me the list of their producers that are featured in their 2018 Grassland Planner. So I've had the opportunity to sit down and interview a couple of them, the January and February producers. This is the January producer episode with Cody Jorgensen, and then the February producer episode with Darren and Jessica Mahalski will be releasing very soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But we will, from here on out, be releasing one episode a month with the producer that is featured for that month. The South Dakota Grassland Coalition is doing some pretty amazing things with their videos that they are producing, the Our Amazing Grasslands video. The Cody Jorgensen video will be linked at workingcows.net/Jorgensen. The show notes page for this episode, workingcows.net/Jorgensen, J-O-R-G-E-N-S-E-N. You can go there and watch the South Dakota Grassland video that they produced called Our Amazing Grasslands, and it features Jorgensen Land and Cattle Partnership, specifically Cody Jorgensen and his part in backgrounding the bulls and what they're doing with cover crops there. And we're going to talk more about that today with Cody on this bonus episode of the Working Cows Podcast. Cody, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. I would like to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and a little bit about the operation that you're a part of.
Sure. My name's Cody Jorgensen. And I'm a partner in Jorgensen Land and Cattle. I'm in partnership with my cousin Nick, my uncle Brian, and my father Greg. They're the four owners of Jorgensen Land and Cattle. We're a diversified family farm operation. I guess what we like to tell people that our widget is the Black Angus bull. We merchandise about 3,750 Angus bulls throughout the course of a year, and we like to think that that's the major part of our business. It really is. We also farm about 10,000 acres, and a lot of the acres that we farm are designed for feed for all the bulls. And then the third part of our operation is we're in the commercial pheasant hunting business, so the entertainment part of our business. So if you look at our logo, I guess it has three diamonds, and the big one is represents the bull, and the one to the left is would represent the crops, and then the one to the right would also represent then the pheasants, or you know, what we call the recreational production agriculture, if you will.
Sure. And we are talking today on what will be released in the very near future as a bonus episode of the Working Cows Podcast. And these bonus episodes are episodes that I'm recording in conjunction or in cooperation with the South Dakota Grassland Coalition, featuring the producers that are featured in their Grassland Planner and then also on their Our Amazing Grasslands videos. And you guys were the featured producers for January of 2018. This is going to be released this Friday, if not sooner. And then the podcast that just released, I just finished releasing it before we started recording, was the episode with Jim Falstick talking about the South Dakota Grassland Coalition and the South Dakota Grassland Planner. So there's those are available, workingcows.net/16. If you need some background to what we're talking about here today, you can go to workingcows.net/16 and check that out. But we're going to dive in and talk about that because this is a lines up what Cody just shared kind of is going to be a great outline for where we're going on the show today, talking about how all of these things play together to make a more sustainable and profitable operation. And so I guess I'd like to dive in to what are some of the motivations or what led you guys to start using that cropland the way that you're using it?
Well, I guess first of all, it just made economic sense. I've got two reports in front of me that Nicholas gave me actually this morning, specifically talking about grazing 2-year-old bulls on crop ground versus having them in the lot. And it's just overwhelming data. We think our cost per day in a feedlot is about $2.15 if that animal is just in the yard every day. That's every cost that we can come up with. You know, the cost of getting the feed delivered to them and all the things associated with feeding that animal in a feed yard, $2.15. Now, we had two different situations, both grazing what we call cover crop. And Brian is our farmer of the family, and he's the guy who comes up with the cocktail mix of what we actually graze. But just the economics of putting these animals out is overwhelming. One study says here that it was 88 cents versus the $2.15 per day. That was our total cost. And the other study, it got down to 46 cents versus the $2.15. So one was $57 per head and the other one ended up $72 per head. And if you want more information about this, I mean, we can get these slides to you and show them to you. But when you start looking at it like that, for not only what it does for the soil, you know, a cover crop in specifically, not only what it does for the soil, but what you can actually get, you know, these numbers just represent pure grazing numbers, right? That doesn't count anything of any kind of soil health advantage or any kind of crop rotation advantage, things like that, that are not figured into this. So it is very substantial. So to answer the question, economics was number one. Not only that, but the other thing it doesn't count is what it does for the animal. You know, animals are grazers, obviously, by nature. And so why not let them graze when they can? You know, we weren't looking to put a lot of gain on these cattle. They're 2-year-old bulls that have been leased once, and they're in motion to get leased again as a 2-year-old. So really, we want them to grow and exercise and graze, okay? And so this is a perfect scenario, and it may not work for everybody, but cattle by nature are grazers, and they can control their own diet and their own health by grazing. The rumen is an amazing, you know, it's an amazing thing, really. And so if we can just understand it and let them graze as much as possible, I think for the well-being of that animal, we're much better off.
Has this been a shift in the way you guys have managed the resources, both the animals and the plants or the crop land? Has this always been the way it has been done at Jorgensen Land and Cattle, or is this a new thing or a newer thing?
We've probably been doing this, and don't quote me on this, but I think we've been planting cover crops for, I suppose, 7 or 8 years, and really have over the last couple of years, we really just recognized the overall benefits, not only, you know, just the savings in the feed yard, but we've also got some data that would show us, you know, better fertility testing after they've been out grazing. I think that those groups of animals are healthier because they're just getting exercise, you know, they're stretching, they're doing what cattle are designed to do. And, you know, that's kind of just led us to more and more cover. It you know, when Brian first started planting cover crop, it was on a percentage of the wheat acres, not all of the wheat acres, but just, you know, on some of the wheat acres. And what this has led to is he literally plants on every acre of wheat stubble now gets a cover crop, whether we can graze it or not.
And how are those cover crops being used? You said you're grazing them. Are you grazing all of them at a specific time of the year, or how are they being used?
Yeah, typically, if we can graze them, they'll get grazed from probably sometime in November until you either run out of feed or Mother Nature forces you to take those cattle off because of some weather event. You know, we've invested a lot of infrastructure and fencing and waters just to get more hoofs out there on that property. It's Brian's belief that if we can get a hoof on that acre, you know, his goal is to try to get those soils back to their most native state, and adding organic matter and cover crops into that soil with the hoof action and all other things that grazing allows you to do, that just gets us one more step closer.
So you say that the goal is to get those acres back to their native state. Does that mean going away from an annual crop, or what does that mean?
That means in conjunction with farming it like it should be farmed, whatever crop you're raising through a diversified rotation, he thinks we still can get those soils back to their most native state in conjunction with farming it like it should be farmed.
Sure. And so you're talking about having a living root in the soil over more of the year, or as much of the year, if not all of the year, as you can.
That's correct.
That's kind of, okay.
Absolutely.
That's what you mean by having it in its most native state, is the living root.
Yep. That is correct.
Gotcha. And then, you know, I mean, the animals themselves are squashing those stubble back into the soil, and that's where you're talking about with your organic matter and adding those things back in and the benefit that you're receiving from that, correct?
That's absolutely right. He's even he told me this morning at our owners meeting that he's taken and I'm not familiar with this, because once again I'm the cattle guy and he's the crop guy, but we work hand in hand in some of this stuff, but he's taken soil tests, the Haney soil tests, which is an advanced soil test, specifically studying, I guess, more organic matter. And he's actually taken a Haney test on some of our native pasture to try to see what he can get those soils. He's trying to, you know, use that as a guideline, you know, on his crop soils. You know, he's trying to get that soil back to its most native state. And it's really impressive.
Yeah, and I will speak from experience. I have sat in on a panel of which Brian was a part at a South Dakota Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers annual convention, their winter conference, a year ago. And that was kind of like when my mind was blown by these concepts of, you know, cover crops and everything that's going on in the soil. You know, there's just so much life in that soil. And then today I heard on the radio that there's two times as much water stored in the soil as there are in all of the rivers and streams and lakes on the surface combined. So that, yeah, it just, every time I open my mind up to these things, it's another mind-blowing experience. But I'll credit Brian with the first initial
yes
mind-blowing experience. And it was just, you know, kind of one of those things in my transition from a pastor for 11 years, and I'm still doing that. I'm recording this in my office right now at the church, but to helping my dad on the ranch. And I went through the High Plains Ranch practicum in Cheyenne, Wyoming. All these things have just converged to really open my mind to the potential that is available to people who are willing to think outside the box and, you know, try some new things and maybe risk looking crazy to the neighbors and put some, you know, put these animals back out there on these cover crops and really benefit both the animal and the soil. So I want to turn, since we aren't talking to Brian, we're talking to Cody today. I want to turn and talk about the benefits to the animal, because that's really interesting to me. But before we do that, I want to take a quick break and thank our sponsors, and then we'll come right back with Cody Jorgensen. This episode has been brought to you by Chris Williams Audio. Check out his website at chriswilliamsaudio.com. For the last 11 years or so, I've been talking for a living. I've gained some skills in talking. I can form a sentence. I can think on my feet. I can respond to questions. I can come up with new questions. All that time developing my speaking craft has not left me a lot of time to figure out how to make audio sound great. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. So you stick to what you know and let Chris Williams stick to what he knows, making your product sound great. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your podcasting, music production, and film audio needs. And we're back with Cody Jorgensen. We are talking today with Cody. He's the featured producer in the South Dakota Grassland Planner for 2018 for the month of January, and a really interesting video that was put out. We've covered some of that, what that video covered already, as far as the savings that they are seeing grazing these bulls out on cover crops. But you talked a little bit before the break about the benefits to the animals themselves. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What are you seeing, or what do you think? Or is there any hard data, or is this just something that you think you're seeing? Because we talked to Trey Patterson on episode 11 of the Working Cows podcast. We talked to Trey Patterson, and he talked about heifer development along the same lines, that developing heifers on native range to a lower percentage of body weight can make them a better cow. And he thinks, he doesn't have any data, but he thinks part of that is because they are trained to work and to graze, and then going into that second breeding season, it's not such a shock to them that I have to figure out how to survive on grass and get bred all at the same time. So is there anything with you guys and these bulls and what you're noticing as far as behavior and those things?
I would agree with that heifer development concept as well. I think the bottom line is, in my opinion, that the more we allow these cattle to physically graze, I think the better off they are for themselves. I think we need to understand a few things. I'll back up and just give you an example. There's after we lease these bulls twice, we send them down to the states that border the Gulf Coast. So East Texas all the way into Florida, right? And typically that's not an area for Angus cattle. All right. And we have sent younger aged animals, or younger aged bulls specifically, into that environment. And as you well know, that environment down there, is the grass is abundant, but it's very it's not very nutritious. Right. So they need to eat a lot of it to get their nutrition. And so what we've recognized is that, you know, once we send a bull down there and he's basically, he has to be about 30 months of age. He has to be through the hard part of his life, through the teething process, and he has to have enough rumen expansion to eat on an estimated 60 to 70 pounds of that grass to get his nutrition. All right. So once he gets to that time frame, they stay down there and they maintain about 1,800 pounds. They don't get up to a ton, and they're lasting way longer than we want them to. All right. And it's not so good for a bull salesman, because we're used to a 1/3 turnover in our bull battery, and it's just not happening. They're lasting for 6 and 7 years past this. So what we think, or what we believe, is once they get the ability to eat that grass, even though it's not very good grass, but once they are able to get that and control their own diet throughout the course of the year, they're never fed a bale of hay after that, you know, down in that environment. They graze and they graze and they graze. They maintain a constant weight year around, and the bulls are they're lasting 5, 6, 7 years. And so that just tells me that once an animal, it can control its own diet, and it knows when it needs to eat and when it doesn't, and so on and so forth. And that animal will tell us what it needs. I just think that it's way better off for that animal's health, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think of it kind of this way, and that's why I called this the Working Cows podcast, because we want those cows to go to work for us. And part of that work that they do is grazing, as long as we can get them to graze, you know, as many months of the year as we can have them out on grass or on a forage, they are saving us money. And, you know, I kind of look at it as, when we're feeding them hay, they're kind of on vacation. Well, what do right. We do when we're on vacation? We get fat and lazy, right?
that's a good concept. That's right.
I think these bulls, maybe that you guys are seeing some of the same thing. And I wonder, just thinking here out loud, are they learning how to get the best grass learning how to get the best forage while they're up here in the north? And then when they go down south, they can still get the best forage out of even a more washy grass down there, but they're still trained to find the best stuff.
That's what I believe. I can't sit here and quantitatively prove that. It's a perception, and it's something that we see. I mean, the fact of the matter is, we're seeing bulls that are coming in as cull bulls, into these, my dad, he's down there. They come into these sale barns into Florida, and he's blown away. They're 13, 14 years old. And you know, it's just, it's kind of a catch 22. It's a double-edged sword, you might say, because you want these bulls to kind of turn over. We're used to that kind of turnover up here in the Midwest. And we're just not seeing that down there. They're lasting longer.
Yeah. Well, I think that reputation is going to build, and people are going to start to notice that, and they're going to come to you for those things, for longer lasting bulls. I've seen the seed stock producers with those kind of claims as well. And that, I think that's something that people are going to start to notice and look for, is forage developed bulls that know how to graze for themselves, and they'll last a little bit longer if they have been raised that way. So,
yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I will share this to you, and this isn't really a positive. It's something that we've just discovered here recently. We just started calving here on about the 1st of February, and we've had just a little bit more challenge calving this year than we have in the past. And there's a couple things that we'll attribute it to. I guess one mainly, this is the best condition that I've ever seen our heifers and our young cows in going into calving season. I mean, I would consider them to be almost over conditioned. You know, they were fat. And it, honestly, we've had just our fair share of problems with calving. The calf weights have been just a skosh higher, not out of control. But more importantly, there's a lot of fat deposited in the birth canal, and or around it, I'll say that. And so the heifers specifically, they just have a challenge. They don't know what they're doing exactly, and they don't want to work very much. They're kind of like a feedlot heifer that gets pregnant and just doesn't want to work and have that calf on her own. So what I'm saying is, for every problem we think we fix, hence cover crop grazing, getting the cows into really good condition, it may lead to another issue that you can't see. And that's the issue that we've been, you know, those are the cards that we've been dealt here the last couple of weeks. And it's not a wreck, don't get me wrong. Our vet says, well, what would you rather have? You know, a skinny cow and a bunch of malnutrition calves, or would you rather have a few more pulls that you're dealing with? And he's right. So my point is that for everything that you think you've fixed or you've made progress, there's always another challenge that comes around the corner.
That's part of what, you know, we talk about here on the Working Cows podcast, just how complicated this industry is. And you pull one string and you don't get just that string. You get all of the other twine it's tied to, you know, you pull that whole roll, mm-hmm. You know, and so there's just so much going on there that you're not able to anticipate everything, but you can always adjust, you know, adapt, improvise, and overcome, I guess, is how we look at that, you know, and we get to try and change it up. Were you guys dry this year or how?
It was dry in June and July, and then we got 11 inches of rain in August. And so then you can imagine what happened to our cover crop. It just exploded. It was unbelievable, really.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. So we have spent the vast majority of the time I had budgeted today talking about the first diamond. Can we squeeze in the last two here?
Yes, sir. Yes.
So we talked about the first diamond, the bulls. What the second one was, the cover or was crops?
Yes.
Right. Farm ground.
Yep.
What would you have to say about that in regards to soil health, South Dakota Grassland Coalition, those kinds of things?
Yeah, the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. You know, Brian and I actually talked about this briefly here last week. You know, just the education that they do is absolutely unbelievable. And a little bit about our story, I guess. We were blessed to win the Leopold Award in 2015. And before the Leopold, we were doing a lot of interesting things. We were grazing cover crop, doing some things. But the Leopold really did resonate in our family, and it made us kind of sit back and think, you know, what more could we be doing? What more could we be doing to make the soil better, make our cattle better, make the land more productive, you know, rotational grazing ideas, just, you know, what else can we do? And so it did, it did set us down, and we did this past couple of years, we have implemented, more cover and a very intense rotational grazing system on the cows on our parent stock herd that we run here on our place. It just really did. There were three or four of us from our operation that went to the grazing school. That was phenomenal. Highly recommend. That's a must. So those are the things that, South Dakota Grassland Coalition, and they're doing their job. Number one, the school, I think single-handedly alone is really, really important.
Yeah, very much. Is that the one that happens in September? They do so many different things.
Yeah, the one in September is the one I'm talking about. Yep.
Very good. And we'll provide a link to that on the website and workingcows.net. And I don't know how I'm going to number these bonus episodes yet. So workingcows.net, you'll be able to find it there. We'll have a link to it there. But anyways, yeah, their education is incredible and just such an active, innovative, forward-thinking group of people. And we're so lucky to be in South Dakota with just all the things that the South Dakota Grassland Coalition is doing. It's an invaluable resource, and we really appreciate them.
Yeah.
What about that third diamond, the animals or the hunting, right?
The hunting. I call it production agricultural entertainment, right? So I like to tell people that if you can farm the ground, an acre of ground, like it should be farmed, properly, no-till, all the conservation stuff that we all talk about and have been doing for many, many years. If you can farm it like it needs to be farmed, if you can take that same acre and have the ability to graze it at some point throughout the course of the year, through cover crop or strip grazing or whatever works for your management. And then the third facet, then, if you can have that same acre and do some sort of production agricultural entertainment. In our part of the world, we're blessed with wild pheasants. And so that's what we do. And we believe that if we can do those three things on an acre of ground, for sure, we'll be sustainable for many generations to come. So, the key is to be able to do it without mining the resources, with doing all three things and leaving the land in better shape than it was when you first started managing it. And so that's kind of the family, overall objective or goal, you might say. And that's kind of how we think about an acre of ground. And so specifically when you talk about hunting pheasants, this past year, believe it or not, we actually hunted pheasants in cover crop, and it was amazing. I think what happens is that when the turnips and the radishes tube out of the top of the soil, they're sticking out 3 to 4, maybe some cases, sometimes 5 or 6, you'll see those birds are pecking on those turnips and pecking on those radishes. You'll just see all sorts of little peck marks on there. And I don't know if they're getting their water source through that turnip, because they're very, very wet at that time. It doesn't take a lot of water to water a pheasant. And I think that's what they're doing. And so consequently, there's one memorable hunt that we had where we walked a cover crop a half mile in length. And I think we harvested about 22 pheasants in that one pass. They were in there.
Wow.
And it was amazing. Now, the downside of that is they're a little tough to walk. When those tubers are sticking out of the ground like this, sometimes you trip and you got a shotgun. So you got to be really careful. But not always is there enough cover for a pheasant in a cover crop field, but in this particular year there was, and we've seen it before. We've actually hunted them years prior to this. So,
a couple of things about that, as a pheasant hunter myself, it's sure a lot more fun to hunt pheasants in an upland game situation than it is in a cornfield, if you ask me.
Yes.
And wild pheasants are way more fun to hunt. It's not much fun if you have to shoo the pheasant up before you can take a crack at it. So
yep.
I do say that as well. But in all seriousness and more related to the topic of our conversation, have you seen an increase in the pheasant population that would coincide with a change in the management strategy? Or can you point to that?
I would love to be able to say that. But the reality is when it comes to wild pheasant, the hatch is that is the dependent on whether we're going to have birds or not. Around our part of the world, the winter doesn't really make a lot of difference. It's really not that horrible where those birds, you know, get suffocated. We've not in years, we haven't had a storm that would devastate bird population. This year, we had a very low bird population as the rest of the state. It was a struggle for the pheasants. And, you know, we've been doing all these things we talk about for many, many years. And one bad spring or one bad hatch in particular devastated the bird population. So I would love to sit here and tell you that, yes, all these things that we're doing enhances the bird population and it makes it better and you know, things like that. But the reality is, you know, if there's no dew in the mornings or sometimes throughout the day while those birds are just day old and they can't fly yet, if they can't get moisture or dew from the leaves to get water, it just takes them out. It really does. And this year, there was three Mother Nature events, I believe, that caused our birds to be probably a record low in the past 25 years. And the first one was a late frost. It knocked a bunch of hens off the off their nest in May, June. And then it turned dry in June and July. And so what chicks did hatch, I suppose there was a 50 to 60% mortality rate on those because it was dry. And then the third event in August, we had two different, when we got all that rain, we had two different hailstorms. And hail and pheasants don't get along very well. And literally, it devastated them. And so, you know, those things and all that progress that you make in 1 year can just seem like it just goes away based on Mother Nature.
How far east are you guys?
We're straight north of Winter. We're Northern Tripp County.
Okay.
So we are West River yet.
Do you guys see a difference as far as your population differing from neighbors or not?
Yeah. Okay. So we still have some really good pockets of wild bird habitat, and a lot of it is obviously water. There's a very slow running stream that runs through a large part of this property, and a lot of nesting area, a lot of nesting grassland that's next to the stream, and then right close to that is some excellent farm ground that we farm. And so they have kind of the perfect world down there where they've got lots of cover, lots of nesting area. And then at the same time, there's adequate a food source for them. And so there are pockets you'll find in this area that are still really good wild bird habitat. It's not, you know, it's not that it all didn't get devastated, but definitely. And that's what it takes. It just takes cover, water, and then the ability to get their nutrition somewhere.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate your time today. A very helpful episode, I think, and I'm really looking forward to this partnership with South Dakota Grassland Coalition and the opportunity to feature people like yourself who are actually doing these things and making use of these practices and seeing the benefits financially on the entertainment side and ultimately for the health of the crops and the animals. So thank you for your time today. Is there anything you want to share or place I could send people to check out what you guys are doing there or how people could find out more about Jorgensen Land and Cattle Partnership?
You bet. Always you can like us on Facebook for sure, Jorgensen Land and Cattle. And then our website is jorgensenfarms.com. And you're welcome to go with that. But Nicholas, my cousin, he does an outstanding job of keeping our Instagram and our Facebook up to speed. There's always new, seems like every day he posts a new picture and something of what's going on, you know, that particular time that pertains to what we do here at Jorgensen Land and Cattle. One last comment I would like to make to anybody that's out there, you know, you hear this a lot, you know, think out of the box. Don't just quickly say no. Sometimes humans by nature, they don't like to change. And I want to squelch that if you will, and just give it some time, let it, you know, think about it and all these new ideas. Just don't say no right away. Give it a chance, do some little changing at a time, and you'll be surprised of what the outcome might be.
Very good. Do you have time for one more quick question?
Sure do.
What does it mean to you guys to be included in the South Dakota Grassland Planner?
Oh, it was an honor. I got to be honest with you. It's, Again, it all stems back to the Leopold Award. When we were fortunate enough to win that in 2015, there's been several events like this that have come forth. And this is just a good example of one of them. And it truly was an honor. And now it's up to us and our responsibility to continue that and get better at what we do.
Very good. Thank you for your time today. Links to everything that Cody mentioned will be up at the website, workingcows.net. As I said, I don't have a fancy link yet, but I will come up with one. How about this? workingcows.net/Jorgensen. workingcows.net/Jorgensen, JORGENSEN, will be the link for this episode. You can go there and we will have links to everything that we talked about here in this episode. This episode has been brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Here's the deal about Kamak Ranch Supply. When you call and ask them about a product, there's no blank pause on the other end of the line because they don't understand the product that you just asked them about. If they are selling it, they understand it because they are producers, and Gary Kamak himself, the owner of Kamak Ranch Supply, is a producer. So if you want answers about the products you're calling to ask about from producers, call Kamak Ranch Supply or check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. As always, if you enjoyed the podcast, please do not hesitate to subscribe, rate, and review through whatever store it is that you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you're finding us, please subscribe, rate, and review, and also share out the episodes. Let other people know that you're enjoying them through social media. Send out a text, send an email, carrier pigeon, I don't care. The links to these episodes are easy enough that you could write them down. You know, workingcows.net/16 was Jim Falstick. workingcows.net/Jorgensen is this episode. So please do share these episodes with people and let them know that you are enjoying them, social media or whatever it is. And we will try and do our best to give you shareable content. And like the page on Facebook, facebook.com/workingcows. And we will see you soon with another bonus episode. And then next week on the show, Monday, we've got Bob Kinford with a really mind-stretching episode on instinctive migratory grazing. So don't miss that.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.